Jesse heard the click of the dog's nails and understood it was indeed still in the house, and coming this way. She began to scream. She knew this was probably the worst thing a person could do. It went against all the advice she'd ever heard about never showing a potentially dangerous animal that you were afraid. But she couldn't help it. She had too good an idea of what was drawing the stray toward the bedroom. She pulled her legs up, using the handcuffs to yank herself back against the headboard at the same time. Her eyes never left the door to the hallway as she did this. Now she could hear the dog growling. The sound made her bowels feel loose and hot and liquid. It halted in the doorway. Here the shadows had already begun to gather, and to Jesse the dog was only a vague shape low to the floor, not a big one, but no toy poodle or chihuahua either. Two orange-yellow crescents of reflected sunlight marked its eyes. "Go away!" Jesse screamed at it. "Go away! Get out! You're not welcome here!" That was a ridiculous thing to say. But under the circumstances, what wasn't? "I'll be asking it to fetch me the keys from the top of the dresser before you know it," she thought. There was a movement from the hind quarters of the shadowy shape in the doorway. It had begun to wag its tail. In some sentimental girl's novel, this probably would have meant the stray had confused the voice of the woman on the bed with the voice of some beloved but long-lost master. Jesse knew better. Dogs didn't just wag their tails when they were happy. They, like cats, also wagged them when they were indecisive, still trying to evaluate a situation. The dog had barely flinched at the sound of her voice, but it didn't quite trust the dim room either. Not yet, at least. The former prince had yet to learn about guns, but it had learned a good many other hard lessons in the 6 weeks or so since the last day of August. That was when Mr. Charles Sutlin, a lawyer from Braintree, Massachusetts, had turned it out in the woods to die rather than take it back home and pay a combined state and town dog tax of $70. $70 for a pooch which was nothing but a Heinz 57 was a pretty tall set of tickets, in Charles Sutlin's opinion. A little too tall. He had bought a motor sailor for himself only that June, granted, a purchase that was well up in the five-figure range. And you could claim that there was some fucked-up thinking going on if you compared the price of the boat and the price of the dog tag. Of course you could. Anybody could. But that wasn't really the point. The point was that the motor sailor had been a planned purchase. That particular acquisition had been on the old Sutlin drawing board for 2 years or more. The dog, on the other hand, was just a spur-of-the-moment buy at a roadside vegetable stand in Harlow. He never would have bought it if his daughter hadn't been with him and fallen in love with the pup. "That one, Daddy," she said, pointing. "The one with a white spot on his nose. The one that's standing all by himself like a little prince." So he'd bought her the pup. No one ever said he didn't know how to make his little girl happy. But $70, maybe as much as 100 if Prince was classified as a Class B larger dog, was serious dough when you were talking about a mutt that had come without a single piece of paperwork. Too much dough, Mr. Charles Sutlin had decided, as the time to close up the cottage on the lake for another year began to approach. Taking it back to Braintree in the back seat of the Saab would also be a pain in the ass. It would shed everywhere, might even puke or take a shit on the carpeting. He could buy it at a Very kennel, he supposed, but those little beauts started at $29.95 and worked up from there. A dog like Prince wouldn't be happy in a kennel anyway. He would be happier running wild, with a whole North Woods for his kingdom. Yes, Sutlin had told himself on that last day of August, as he parked on a deserted stretch of Bay Lane, and then coaxed the dog out of the back seat. Old Prince had the heart of a happy wanderer. You only had to take a good close look at him to see that. Sutlin wasn't a stupid man, and part of his mind knew this was self-serving bullshit. But part of his mind was also exalted by the idea of it. And as he got back into his car and drove off, leaving Prince standing at the side of the road and looking after him, he was whistling the theme from Born Free, occasionally bursting into a snatch of the lyrics. "Born free, to follow your heart." He had slept well that night, not sparing a thought for Prince, soon to be the former Prince, who had spent the same night curled up beneath a fallen tree, shivering and wakeful and hungry, whining with fear each time an owl hooted or an animal moved in the woods. Now the dog Charles Sutland had turned out to the theme of Born Free stood in the doorway of the master bedroom of the Burlingame summer home. The Sutland cottage was on the far side of the lake, and the two families had never met, although they had exchanged casual nods at the town boat dock over the last 3 or 4 summers. Its head was down, its eyes were wide, and its hackles were up. It was unaware of its own steady growl. All of its concentration was focused on the room. It understood in some deep instinctual way that the blood smell would soon overwhelm all caution. Before that happened, it must assure itself as completely as it could that this was not a trap. It didn't want to be caught by masters with hard, hurtful feet, or by those who picked up hard pieces of the ground and threw them.
"Go away!"
Jessie tried to shout, but her voice came out sounding weak and trembly. She wasn't going to make the dog go away by shouting at it. The bastard somehow knew she couldn't get up off the bed and hurt it.
"This can't be happening," she thought. "How could it be? When just 3 hours ago I was in the passenger seat of a Mercedes with my seatbelt around me, listening to the Rainmakers on the tape player, and reminding myself to see what was playing at the Mountain Valley Cinemas, just in case we decided to spend the night. How can my husband be dead when we were singing along with Bob Walkenhorst? 'One more summer,' we sang. 'One more chance, one more stab at romance.' We both know all the words to that one because it's a great one, and that being the case, how can Gerald possibly be dead? How can things have possibly gotten from there to here? Sorry, folks, but this just has to be a dream. It's much too absurd for reality." The stray began to advance slowly into the room, legs stiff with caution, tail drooping, eyes wide and black, lips peeled back to reveal a full complement of teeth. About such concepts as absurdity, it knew from nothing. The former prince with whom the 8-year-old Catherine Sutland had once romped joyfully, at least until she'd gotten a Cabbage Patch doll named Marnie for her birthday and temporarily lost some of her interest, was part lab and part collie. A mixed breed, but a long way from being a mongrel. When Sutland had turned it out on Bay Lane at the end of August, it had weighed 80 pounds, and its coat had been glossy and sleek with health, a not unattractive mixture of brown and black, with a distinctive white collie bib on the chest and undersnout. It now weighed a bare 40 pounds, and a hand passed down its side would have felt each straining rib, not to mention the rapid, feverish beat of its heart. Its coat was dull and bedraggled and full of burdocks. A half-healed pink scar, souvenir of a panicky scramble under a barbed wire fence, zigzagged down one haunch, and a few porcupine quills stuck out of its muzzle like crooked whiskers. It had found the porker lying dead under a log about 10 days ago, but had given up on it after the first noseful of quills. It had been hungry, but not yet desperate. Now it was both. Its last meal had been a few maggoty scraps nosed out of a discarded garbage bag in a ditch running beside Route 117, and that had been 2 days ago. The dog, which had quickly learned to bring Catherine Sutland a red rubber ball when she rolled it across the living room floor or into the hall, was now quite literally starving on its feet. Yes, but here, right here on the floor, within sight, were pounds and pounds of fresh meat and fat, and bones filled with sweet marrow. It was like a gift from the god of strays. The one-time darling of Catherine Sutland continued to advance on the corpse of Gerald Burlingame.